Hey guys, real quick before we get started, we are doing a free giveaway for listeners between now and May 31st. Cash prizes, free swag, yacht meetup tickets, San Diego Padre tickets, and more. All you got to do to qualify is go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and drop a 5-star review. Send a screenshot to giveaway@summerscapital.com and we'll be selecting lucky winners May 31st. As always, I appreciate the support. Now let's jump into the show.
You know, I believe that the majority of people's decision making is who they're doing it with. I mean, there's so many different vehicles out there. There's so many different asset classes just inside of real estate. You know, there's so many different funds and structures and all that. I think really what it comes down to is the majority is who am I doing it with? And so if you're just getting started, rather than going and trying to front and put on an act that you're something that you might not yet be, I would encourage people to surround themselves with some people with some experience and then go after the people that you have this long-lasting relationship with and let them give you an at-bat.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of The Report Saturday edition. And I got my co-host today, my man, James McCabe. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, excited to have you on and talk about starting a fund, pros and cons of a fund. And as we know, you've raised 100 million plus. You're on your third fund now and a bunch of different variations with it. But dude, first question I have is, man, like, what's the benefits of doing a fund versus kind of a single asset syndication?
I like the protection, you know, of if you have a large enough fund and you can put multiple projects in it or assets in it. I like for the investor to be able to go into a place that is more diversified than one single project. You know, I think that there's a lot of great home run stories and there's a lot of projects that, you know, might not have failing, but they're certainly not performing at where they should. And if you can raise an environment that's backed by multiple projects, I think it's to the advantage of everyone involved.
Yeah, I agree. We're on our first fund right now, but prior to this, we were doing a lot of single asset syndications. And I feel like from a risk-adjusted return basis for the investor, it's a lot safer, right? They get to diversify across multiple assets. You don't need to pick and choose which deal you're going to participate with and which ones you're going to sit out. You can just be diversified across 4, 5, 6 deals. And if one of them misses, but the other four hit, you're still going to be in the green. So it protects your investment. And I think from the general partnership side, if you're like an active investor, it's like a reporting standpoint, it's one set of reporting versus 4 or 5 sets of investors. From a distribution standpoint, it's one set of distributions versus 4 or 5. So from a economies of scale perspective and a workload perspective, return on your time, I think it makes a lot of sense. Next question for you. You mentioned, you know, you got a lot of SEC regulations, 506C, 506B. You mentioned you did a Reg A. What exactly is a Reg A, and talk about some of the benefits of that?
Listen, I started the Reg A journey, which was by far the most expensive to go ahead and file. And it took the longest. I mean, it took us almost 8 months to get that thing across the finish line.
Yeah, much longer.
Yeah. And, but
what is something like that cost to start?
We were probably just north of $80,000,
okay.
You know, in fees all around. But I have this battle with accreditation. You know, like you have to be an accredited investor to participate in a lot of these investments. And one side of me loves the protection. You know, I've got a grandma that, you know, she's not going to get fleeced by some smooth talker, right? Because she's not accredited. She's not even going to be eligible. Mm-hmm. It's great. The other half of me is like, well, how are we going to help, you know, a certain class elevate and retire with dignity if they don't have access to these top tier investments? Mm-hmm. And so that was my way of looking for a vehicle that allowed for non-accredited investors to participate in. Mm-hmm. And so you talk about regulation, like, from that standpoint, it's my understanding that that has about as much reporting to the SEC as any fund that I've discovered.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do they want?
They want quarterly updates. They have certain restrictions, you know, so my understanding is that you can only invest 10% of your net worth. So if you have $400,000 in a former 401k, but you don't have $1 million net worth, you know, not including your primary residence, or you're not making a couple hundred grand or 300 grand a year, your eligible investment is only $40,000 in that environment.
Unless you're accredited.
Unless you're accredited. And if you're accredited, and then what people, do you need the Reg A for? You
most,
can just go.
Yeah, and most people that are not accredited, they're not going to have that kind of money.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Okay.
You know, because think about it. If they've had a, let's say you've been like a steady Eddie worker making 70 grand a year and you've done it for 25 years, you know, you might have saved up $250,000 or $400,000, $500,000, $600,000. But at making $65,000, $70,000 a year, you most likely haven't grown your net worth outside of that much. And so there's really a sweet spot. I mean, there's a lot of, you talked about earlier the trillions of dollars in that environment. I think a huge portion of that is with our non-accredited investors. And so I was looking for a vehicle that could serve them, you know, the same way, but that's a lot. I mean, you can invest, you know, the first time it didn't get approved because our minimum was too high, and our minimum was at like $10,000. And so, I mean, they want the minimums to be low, and it's almost like
how
in
low,
my head,
how low are we talking?
Like $1,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, and it just not yet.
I think we'll use it later. When you have $1,000 minimum, does that take a lot of chips off the table from your higher dollar investors? Because maybe they could have invested the 150K or 200K minimum, but because your minimum is now 1,000, they're like, let me just start with a little bit and see how you do first.
Listen, our minimum right now in the placement fund three is
$100,000. Okay.
In our PPM, we have the ability to take as little as 25. The reason we're taking $100,000 and that's where we advertise is because that's where we're at. And I hope in 2 years from now, our minimum will be $250,000 and it will continue to climb. But so I think that there's ways to advertise that wouldn't hinder, you know, somebody. But, you know, in that environment, it wouldn't deter the $125,000 because that $125,000 investor, according to those regulations, and at least in my understanding, would be accredited. Because if they can only invest 10% of their net worth, 125 would mean they would have a net worth of over $1 million, which would make them accredited, which would make them eligible for the other funds.
Yeah. For the folks out there, maybe they're listening to this show and they want to start a fund, they want to start raising capital, but they haven't done it yet before. What is the best one or two vehicles for you to get new investor leads?
I have a belief system that there's an 80-20 rule around raising capital.
Okay. You know, what do you mean by that?
I just had a client say that I was one of 16 people that they spent time with, husband and wife, 16 registered investment advisors, financial advisors, and they're going with us. Is my vehicle like just out of this world? Like, you know, just absolutely blows it away. Well, yeah, I think that it's above average, right? Like I believe that if you look at our vehicle versus what most people are exposed to, it's going to stand out. But what I heard in that was that they liked me more. And so I think that when you can surround yourself with the right people that have experience, the right partnerships, you can then go to the people that trust you as a person and start there. Because, you know, I believe that the majority of people's decision making is who they're doing it with. I mean, there's so many different vehicles out there. There's so many different asset classes just inside of real estate. You know, there's so many different funds and structures. And all that, I think really what it comes down to is the majority is who am I doing it with? And so if you're just getting started, rather than going and trying to front and put on an act that you're something that you might not yet be, I would encourage people to surround themselves with some people with some experience and then go after the people that you have this long-lasting relationship with and let them give you an at-bat.
I always say if it's your first time raising capital, you know, start with the people that you already know, right? So people that know, like, and trust you are likely going to be the ones that invest with you early on. Because if you don't have a track record, the chances that you're going to attract an accredited investor that doesn't already know you is very, very low. And so, you know, go into your phone book, go into your Instagram and get deep with all the people that you know. Maybe these are folks that you met in high school. Maybe these are people that you worked with at a job 10 years ago. But write down all these people. And I always say, like, put them into these different buckets, right? So, like, label them. Okay, these are my college friends. These are you know, family members. These are folks that I played college softball with. These are people that I'm in adult sports league with, right? And then now you have maybe 7 or 8 buckets. And the idea is not to get all those people to invest, but try to get at least one person from each of those 7 or 8 buckets to invest in your first opportunity, because now you have social proof and you have social collateral. Next time you have an opportunity, you can say, hey, so-and-so invested in my first deal. And if so-and-so invested and trust me, then you should too, right? And then you start to build trust, and that starts to compound over time. The second thing I will say is, I think, you know, social media and a podcast, I think that is big in terms of building trust. I think a lot of people that don't even listen to your podcast, don't go to your meetup, don't maybe look at a lot of your content, but they see, oh, James is hosting a meetup every single month and James is putting out a new podcast every single week. I don't listen to the podcast, but I see these putting out a new episode and it starts to build trust. And then over time, that trust leads to investor capital. I think it's very hard to build trust or establish some sort of rapport with a 30-second TikTok or a 45-second Instagram reel. However, people that are listening to hour-long segments of you speak on a podcast starts to build a lot of trust over time, and people get to feel like they already know you before they even know you. And so by the time they jump on an investor call, it's like, hey, they already know you. And now it's just a 5-minute conversation and they're sending money in. So I think those are my two best buckets to do so. Let me ask you this. So go ahead.
You open up a door with me that I could spend hours on. Like, this is my passion or in this space. But one thing I would lend to those people is if you can get an environment where you can educate them, and you mentioned a podcast or some sort of content around there. But man, if I can just get in a conversation with somebody where I could teach them why I'm making the decisions I'm making, I think it has a huge impact. Rather than trying to sell somebody on it, I don't think you would ever hear me saying, multifamily is the greatest. If you're not investing in multifamily, you're crazy. And it's like, no, just hear me out. If you're curious, I'll tell you why we've chosen this asset class. I think it lands differently from a couple different ways. One, a credibility standpoint. You actually know what you're talking about.
Totally.
And you have a passion behind it and you have a plan and a vision. And I believe it aligns for people to make a decision based on education rather than to feel like they've been sold on something. And so it's an approach that I like. And that's why I love, you know, creating some of this content, is because you can educate people and, you know, it'll draw them to you.
Yeah, I like that. And that's kind of how we've always built it. It's like, we always want to position ourselves from like a place of strength. And it's, I always say like, hey, you know, we would love to have you as part of our investor community. If it's a fit and you want to participate, great. But if not, no worries. Maybe we can do something down the road. And that's it. You know, we never do pressure tactics or any of that kind of stuff. What kind of tactics do you like to use when closing maybe some new investor capital?
One, I like making clear agreements with people. I think that has a huge benefit to somebody. Like, what are your intentions? You'll see our company tagline is intention, strategy, and alignment. Let me spend some time with you discovering what your intention is here today with your capital, with your savings, with these accounts. I'll then introduce our strategy. And if there's alignment there, then let's do something.
Yeah.
And if there's not, like, I'm pretty connected. Let's see if we can help you get to wherever you're trying to go now that I know what your intentions are. And I think that it's a pretty relaxed setting. And that's not talk either. Like, if somebody's making a decision to not move forward with us, it is a follow-up. Hey, can we help you? It sounds like, do you know who Rich is? I think he has a vehicle that would, you know, suit where you're trying to go. Would you mind if I made an introduction? And I think that that approach, you know, that age old, help enough people get what they want, what you want will come. I make that introduction. What do you think of me? Oh, James is a good dude, man. Like, that was great. James just referred me a new client. What do they think of me? My phone will ring again in some way, shape, or form. And so I think that approach of just that sincere slowing back, seeing what they're looking for, and just being, you know, aware enough or intentional enough to realize if your vehicle is the right fit for them. And if it's not, how else can you serve them?
Yeah, I like that. Another one that we use that works really well is for the folks that are like, they're kind of new to our ecosystem and they want to move forward, but they're like not quite there. We always offer to connect them to, like, you know, a couple of our past investors that invested in multiple projects with us.
Love
just
that.
To kind of give them that just the little additional trust to kind of push them over the hump to make them feel a little bit more comfortable. But, you know, you got to be careful though, because we don't like to bother our investors unless it's like someone that's like, okay, they're going to invest a substantial amount of money and they're like, they've done all their due diligence and this is they're ready to wire their funds in, but this is the last step. Then we'll make that introduction. But, you know, for some of these folks that want to reach out to them, I mean, because we get people all the time that, and I always tell them, I'm like, yo, like, they're not going to be a fit to be in our investor community because not all money is good money in my eyes. But, you know, some people want to do so much due diligence and they want to ask all these questions and they want performers and all this stuff. And they want to talk to all these investors. And it's like, dude, I'm like, I don't think they're going to be a fit to be in our investor community because it's time, right? And if they're already causing all those headaches before. And one thing I noticed is like, you got three types of investors. You got, we call them gamers. We got people that can make a decision. It's either a yes or a no. We love those people. So you get three answers. You get yes, right? You get utility from yeses, and you could apply this to anything in life. You could apply it to dating and whatever. So you get a yes, you get utility from yeses. But you also, the folks that say no, and they can make a quick decision, they say, hey, it's not for me right now, but keep me in mind for the next one. We gain time, right? But for the ones that want to do all this due diligence and they want to jump on a 45-minute follow-up call, and then they're going to write an email with 10 more questions, and then they're going to jump on another call, and then they want to go drive by the properties, and then they want to look at your loan amounts, and they want to look at the debt, all this stuff. Those investors that I found is 99.9% of them never move forward anyways because they can't make a decision, right? And we know the avatar now because we have over 100 investors in our fund. And, you know, some of them ask a few, you know, questions, but none of our investors in our fund. And when we got some very sophisticated folks in our fund. We got real estate CPAs. We got WNBA players. And we got a lot of smart people in our fund. And none of them ask those kind of questions. And so now when we get someone that's asking, writing Alex Johnson on my team, this list of emails and all that stuff, I'm like, guys, it's an automatic red flag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I say all this in that we get utility from yeses, we gain time from noes, and we don't get anything from the maybes.
Yeah.
They tend to suck time. It's a big opportunity cost.
I think that if I could lend some advice to somebody just getting started, is that naturally you want the big investor, somebody that can come put a million plus down in one swoop.
Mm.
In my experience, the close rate is so much smaller. It's this really strange dynamic. I believe that those people have the ability to make decisions. It just takes longer to getting them into a decision-making environment. They're gone, they're traveling, they're busy, they're whatever. And then by the time you finally wrangle them and then it doesn't align, then you have to get past some of their team. And, you know, it's like, man, if you can just stay consistent, go raise at that $100,000, $250,000 clip, like those will stack up. People with, you know, million, $2 million bucks, they're getting pitched to all the time. Everyone's going to them. You go educate a $200,000 investor, like you can really progress them along and, you know, just stay active and consistent. But I think everyone's trying to go for that big fish all the time.
Mm.
I think they'll come. They'll come with your activity. They'll come with your confidence as you're closing like 100 clients. Man, that's awesome. That's amazing. You're going to sit down with your, you know, potential investors with a certain amount of confidence because you have over 100 clients in your funds. Like they'll see that. That will attract the big whales. Go get those 100 first.
Yeah, I love it, man. Cool, brother. Well, hey, I appreciate you wrapping on a lot of this stuff. Where can the folks get in touch with you, James, if they want to learn more?
Yeah, my Instagram handle is Jay McCabe. I've got a podcast, A Million Ways to Make $1 Million, that just went live this week. And, you know, we do a lot on LinkedIn now. And so you can find me, James McCabe, on LinkedIn.
There it is. And always looking fly, rocking the black on black like a funeral. I got my man, James McCabe. I'm Rich Summers. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you on the next one. Peace.